Welcome to the fourth preseason Supercoach Coach podcast. I'm joined again this week by FB Donkey.
G'day everyone. G'day Marcus. How you going, mate?
Good, thanks. We're pretty keen to talk about the defenders this week, the premium defenders before the end of the NAB Cup that's coming up in only, I think, a couple of days' time. I'm keen to watch the Geelong Cats play again tomorrow night. But in the meantime, we're going to go through these premium defenders, and our next show should hopefully be on the weekend. We'll be wrapping up the NAB Cup. In the meantime, we'll just get straight into it with the four most expensive premium defenders available to us this year. They're all new to the defenders in 2013. None of these guys were listed back there, so it's a privilege to have them because they're all high scoring and potentially play outside of the back line, which we know can often lead to inconsistent points. So how do you feel about Bartel, McVeigh, Walker, Mitchell? I know they'll be very heavily scrutinized in the preseason because most of us are looking to at least pick a couple of them to anchor the back line with some big scores.
Yeah, I think when Supercoach opened and we saw those guys all listed back there, most people just put three of them straight into their teams because they have such high potential for scoring. I think that the one real lock out of them is probably Mitchell. Pretty durable player, has averaged 104, 110, 113 in the last 3 years. Even if he dropped a couple of points and averaged just over 100, you're not going to be too disappointed. Consistent, had some really big games. So I think that Mitchell's probably the one that stands out the most to me. What about you? Who stands out the most?
Yeah, he's probably the safest bet. And I think he's also the one most likely to increase in scoring, if that is in fact possible for these four guys. They all had good seasons last year. Apart from that, I think Walker strikes me as the riskiest.
Yeah, if I had to scratch one off, he'd be the one that I'd scratch off as well. I know that he sort of finally put a season together last year. It was a new role last year, so he'd never played that before. He has a really strong kicking game, and that's where he got a lot of his points. So 106 average from Walker last year. But when a player plays for 10 years and then has 106 average, which is 20 points higher than any other average he's had, it's pretty hard for them to back up. And a lot of the times they either don't back it up or they go backwards a little bit. Yeah, I think that he's definitely the riskiest out of the four and hasn't really made it into my team.
Yeah, and the other two, Bartel and McVeigh. Now, again, you're picking these guys because they're going to score on a premium, but I still think with these two guys, there's a bit of risk, quite a decent amount of risk that they might even go backwards in scoring. But you'd think that they'd still hopefully both clear 100 average.
Yeah, but so who do you take out of the two?
It's tough. I think probably McVeigh out of the two, and that pains me to say because I'm a Geelong supporter, obviously. But yeah, I'm not too sure how Geelong are going to go this year. We lost a lot of experienced players, and we've had some key injuries to our older crop of young players like Christensen, Motlop, and now Vardy.
All that could mean a bigger role for Jimmy.
It could mean that, but if we're not contending for the top four anymore this year, and we might be a bit shaky at the start, then you'd think that Bartel may struggle to score because he's done well, but he hasn't been the player to win us the games. He's done well to fill roles often, and he comes in for a crucial moment sometimes, but he doesn't take the game on his back and wins it off his own boot like maybe a Selwood does. So if we were to not score as well as a team, I'd worry that Bartel as a utility role may struggle to score a little bit. I don't think he's a bad selection, but I just think there's a little bit more risk with Bartel than there may have been in previous years, just because I'm not too sure exactly how Geelong are going to go this year, and we still don't know exactly where Bartel is going to be playing, whereas McVeigh, he's either going to do this half-back thing again or he's going to do midfield. We know the Swans are going to do pretty well. I just think there's a lot less risk. Having said that, I don't think Bartel's a poor selection. I just think out of the two, I'd probably lean toward McVeigh.
It's interesting if you look back over the averages history. Bartel really fluctuates from year to year. He can go up 10 points and down 10 points, and it's happened quite a lot of times. McVeigh, average hasn't changed much over time, but last year was the first time in his whole career he'd averaged over 100. And that's a little bit like Walker in the sense that player makes a big jump like that. They've had a role change. McVeigh has indicated that he'll probably play more midfield this year with Reece Shaw and Lewis Johnson in the back line, maybe doing most of the rebounding back there, although he'll play some of that role. So maybe he might go back to a sort of a 97, 98 player. they're both probably got a fair bit of risk attached to them, and both probably end up totally fine picks, and realistically a good chance you might want both in your team by the end of the year.
So how do you have it 1, 2, 3, 4 then, Mark?
Mitchell, Bartel, McVay, Walker. And I think we're probably doing a little bit of a disservice to Walker, because he could definitely continue that average. He just probably presents the biggest risk out of the four.
And they have recruited Dale Thomas, who you'd think, if they're both performing at their peak, Daisy might be, you know, taking the outside tag away from Walker too. Although, you know, Walker really wasn't under that much of a tag pressure last year. He'd probably be a bit more at risk of it this year. Now, to the next rung of players, they did not average 100, but you would think that most of these guys are a decent shot at potentially hitting that this year. And the first one of those blokes we've talked about in the past under the section where we talked about the players who moved clubs in the offseason. And so the first bloke is Heath Shaw, who's now with GWS Giants.
And he was a huge factor for you last year, mate.
Yeah, he was. Did pretty well, especially at the price I brought him in at. A lot of people lost confidence in Shaw early last year, so that was the main reason he turned out to be a POD. But he's still got the same issues of being inconsistent and having troubles staying on the park. But having said that, you'd think that he'll have a bigger role in their team, obviously, as one of the few senior blokes. So maybe he'll get a little bit more of the ball coming through his hands out of the half back line.
Heath Shaw is a big no for me this year. Just too many risk attached. He very rarely plays 20 games playing for the Giants, so can't see him increasing his average significantly, so enticement just isn't there for me.
Yeah, he's certainly a really risky selection, but you know, all players seem to lift their game a little bit when they go to a new club, and he'll be there on a lot of money, and I think he's got a leadership role too, if I'm not wrong. So I don't think he's a completely awful selection, because he has shown himself to be backline premium quality year to year. He's normally in the top 10 defenders, and he's backed that up pretty much every year, so you know that you don't just fluke those sorts of things. So I think he's still a decent selection, but yeah, probably won't be in my starting six either, because I'm more tempted by a couple more of the blokes that we have in this section, and one of them is Luke Hodge, a former favorite of mine.
Who would you rather have a beer with, Luke Hodge or Heath Shaw? Who would you rather have in your Supercoach team? Which one I'd be picking? Hodgy was Supercoach Gold a few years ago. Everyone used to pick him when he was available as a defender. He's finally available as a defender again. Looks to have overcome his injuries. Doesn't play so much midfield match winner anymore. They do spread the points around a little bit at the Hawks, but he looks like he could definitely post over 100 average, and he could potentially match it with the Bartel McVay type.
Well, we've seen Hodgy. He's capable of averaging 115 when he's on song. He just hasn't had a good run at it for a while. But again, you probably, even if you pick him, you're picking him because you like the value that you potentially see in him. You probably like him as a point of difference. I suspect he probably will be because of his risk factor, but you probably not hoping that he's going to stay in your team for the entirety of the season, because even before he went through a series of quite chronic injuries over the last couple of years, he's always been known as a player who gets soft tissue injuries. So considering his age, and considering, you know, especially very recently, he hasn't had a good run at it, you'd assume that he might be a player you pick up, averages maybe 105, 110 over a period, but you'd expect that he might get injured and you need to have to trade him throughout the season.
Yeah, I guess I've probably got a bit higher hopes on Hodgie then, because he missed round one last year and then was rested late in the season. He did get subbed off against the Demons at one point, but didn't really miss big stretches because of injury. Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me to see him play 20-plus games this year. Definitely in consideration for my side.
Been very tempted to put him in, Mark. As you know, I really love the guy, but I actually have been scared off by the injury risk so far. So it's good to hear that you think he's slightly less risky than that. That might help swing me back to the Hodge camp. I'm always happy to be there.
I guess as we sort of talked about a couple of weeks ago with the midfielders and Mark Murphy, Hodgie's one of my favourite players. I'm sort of looking for reasons to pick him, I guess. And the one thing to be wary of is if you do take Mitchell, a lot of people are looking at Suckling as well as a cheap mid price from defence, and then you end up putting a third Hawk in your team. So just something to be mindful of.
Yeah, and there's also Birchall down back as well, who we'll get to a little bit later. But in the meantime, let's talk about Hibbard from Essendon. Last year, just was really consistent throughout the year. He's actually a mature age, hasn't played. Is this only his...
This will be his fourth season.
So he's very new to it, but has been scoring well since he's really come into the system. Hasn't yet managed an average of 100 for the year. We know how hard that can be from the back line, though. Do you think this is the year Hibbard could do it? I think he got injured... with a really small
Tuesday night, mate. Bit of a hamstring injury. They say that they're aiming for round one, and let's hope that that's right because he's really important for the Bombers. He did average, it's about 100 for the first 10 rounds last year, and then teams really started doing, I guess, what they did to Heath Shaw, and that was trying to drag him back a bit towards the goal square, trying to make sure he couldn't get the inside 50 kicks because he's quite damaging when he is doing that. So in that respect, I guess if he stays back, he's probably the number one target in the Essendon back line for teams to lock down on a bit. So maybe that might cap his average a little bit, but he was definitely someone in strong consideration before the injury. And if he plays round one, I could totally understand why people would pick him.
One good thing you know about starting Hibbert is that unlike quite a lot of the backline players, they'll fluctuate a lot and you'll have other opportunities to pick them up. Hibbert should hopefully hold his price once he stays on the park. Now, Hanley from the Brisbane Lions, Mark, last year really broke out after being watched for a couple of years in terms of breakout potential in the Supercoach scene. How do you feel about his premium prospects this year? Because obviously on the back of such a good year last year, we'll be paying, I think, $515,000 in order to bring him into our team. So he'd have to do like a lot, well. Doesn't
it? I'm a little bit reluctant on some of the Brisbane premiums. Maybe I'd just listen to Matthew Lloyd too much and don't see Brisbane having a great year this year. And that's probably holding me back a bit from picking them. But Brisbane do have a number of people to tag. They do like locking down on him because he can be so dangerous. So hopefully he could avoid some of that tagging. I think that he should continue developing, and that wouldn't surprise me to see him get his average up to 100. I think he could be a potentially All-Australian sort of elite halfback flanker. So yeah, I can definitely understand why people are picking him. He's not really in my considerations personally, but he does have some upside, and he was in my team at one stage last year, and he's great to watch and support.
And this year is a mid-back MPP as well, Mark, which is another string to his bow.
Yeah, I think you'd really want to probably see him having some extra midfield time this year.
Now, on to the last player in this price bracket, and that's Cade Simpson, playing for Carlton, averaged 95 last year. He wasn't available as a backline player last year, was he, Mark?
No, because I think he's been playing on the wing for a fair time. So him and Walker sort of worked together off the half-back flank last year, and for a certain stretch there until the end of the year, Simpson was really killing it and copped a bit of attention, which probably limited his output a bit. Averaged between 90 and 100 for the last 5 years. Personally, don't see a huge upside to him. It hasn't really been in my consideration over the preseason.
I've seen him in a few teams, and I'm guessing that's just because he's available in the back line for the first time.
If you look at his stretch from sort of round 9 to round 22, it was 100 pretty much every week. So just wonder whether he could stretch that out over the course of the year, and I probably have my doubt.
Yeah, on to the next price bracket of players, and we're looking at a few guys who have been perennial Supercoach favorites, but even still I don't think any of them has averaged 100 average yet so far in their careers.
Enright did in 2008 just over 100.
Okay, well, I think, is that only one season between the four of them then? Still, I think Enright, Birchall, McKenzie, Hearn, we always see a lot of potential in them, but just because all the opposition coaches can see it just as clearly, they get clamped down on and they don't quite fulfill their Supercoach potential. All very crucial to their teams. Any of them likely to step up and average 100 this year?
Ooh, tricky. I think out of the four, Birchall's probably the most likely if he was fit, just because of how nuts he went at the start of last year and was suckling back. Maybe he gets freed up a little bit. Mitchell playing off half back as well. I guess that's what you'd be hoping for. Hearn could definitely push close to that. I guess it depends if he can get a little bit more midfield time. And McKenzie's still young and developing and is sort of a bit more of an unknown quantity. So he's gone 68, 66 and 88 in his 3 years. So you could see him potentially pushing up. Which one would you take first out of those four?
Enright started the preseason really well. So
didn't he have like 36 touches or something in the first game?
Yeah, and I think if we're going to see a bit more ball in the Geelong backline this year, Enright will probably be one of the beneficiaries to that. He's really good at taking those marks in the back 50 from opposition kicks.
Missed 5 games in 6 years.
Yeah, and I think out of all of them, he's also most consistent. So yeah, I'd probably give it to Enright. And then Birchall will be really, really close by after. I just think that Birchall's such an elite offensive player from the back line that opposition just kind of have to clamp down on him. And then I don't think he's as strong defensively as Enright to maybe get points while he's under the influence of the tag. And so that's why I probably have Enright just a little bit ahead of him. But you would think out of the two of them that Birchall's got more room for growth because he may not have peaked yet as a player, even though he's shown us a lot already.
Yeah, they could potentially sort of try and move him up the ground a little bit to get rid of that defensive role being played on him. But he hasn't featured in either of the Hawks' preseason games yet. I think that's a real concern, and I haven't really seen him in many sides as a result. He was tagged out of some games last year and ended up with some 30s and 40s, so that would definitely be scaring people off because he's such a threat that they really try and lock down on him and put someone on him. Out of the four, the one that interests me the most is actually probably Shannon Hearn. Had a little bit of a down year last year, missed a few games with injury, should be a bit fitter. It's really depending on West Coast improving and having a better draw this year. So if West Coast do that, I think that Hearn's average will naturally go up to the 9,500 area. So he presents a bit of value. So he's probably out of the four, actually the one that's most likely to end up in my team.
Yeah, I don't know, mate. He's burnt me too many times for me to be comfortable with going with him, to be honest. And I'm not too sure what he needs to do to make that next step in terms of scoring. But to me, it seems like it'll take a little bit more than just West Coast improving because I've picked him even when they were doing decent and he still didn't quite live up to the potential I saw in him. I don't know. He just doesn't seem to quite be able to deliver it into consistent hundreds.
Yeah, his highest average ever, 93, so I can understand that. I think he showed last year that he was better able to handle a tag because he is pretty good defensively, he's good over his head, and he can take some contested marks, which limits how much they can actually shut down on him. So
his kicking reminds me a little bit of Andrew Mackie's in terms of how they score. Everybody says Mackie's a good long kick and he gets it off half back. He gets quite a few rebound 50s, but because they can kick so long and they're so penetrating, they often try like a lot more attacking, maybe long shots that don't quite pan out. And for as good kicks as they both are, they don't seem to be able to quite translate. And I know Mackie, when he was at his fantasy prime, was more of a DT player as well. I know Hearn gets a lot of Supercoach points for some of the things that he does, but in some of the games, I just think if he was a little bit more consistent with his kicking, if he didn't throw some of them away, that maybe he'd break up into that next level as well. But, you know, some of those risky kicks going to inside 50s when they're turnovers, they do hurt him as well.
Definitely underpriced because round 13 against the Hawks, he scored 8 points, picked up the injury, got subbed off. So that means he's significantly underpriced because of that. Between rounds 5 and 9 last year, 5 games in a row, tagged every week, over 100 every week.
So there's probably never been a stronger case for Hearn than this year, than you could argue, Mark?
Potentially, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. He's definitely in the mix in the top 6 or 7 for my team.
That takes me a little by surprise, I got to say. But yeah, maybe I should look at him a little bit closer too. Next bracket of players, and this is more of the value bracket now. We've got Jack Grimes from Melbourne, who has been a favourite of Supercoach sites in the past as well. We've got Swallow, who's the number one pick up-and-comer from Gold Coast. And of course, we've got another fellow number one pick in Jack Watts at the D's. Again, available as a swingman up, back, and down forward. But he's probably a little bit more relevant in the back line because of, there's obviously a few less options. Do you like any of these three Smokies for your Supercoach side, Mark? I think you've been burnt by Grimesy a couple of times.
Including last year. I think I traded him in one of the other competitions and he scored like 12 in a quarter, got injured and was out for a while. So I'm glad that makes you happy, mate. Yes, I'm extremely interested in these three.
Oh, wow. Watts here too. Did you end up starting Watts last year?
I don't want to talk about it, mate. yes, I did start Watts last year, and he was woeful. He was so bad. And we haven't actually seen him in the NAB Cup yet, so from that perspective, there's a little bit hidden there, but all reports are that he's going to play a lot more on the ball. He averaged 75 last year. Just can't see him doing that again. Had averaged 85 the year before. You would think that would probably be, to me, that's his baseline, is the 85 average. So I would be extremely surprised to see him average less than that. And I think he could easily improve to a 95 average, which at his price, it's a bit over 400,000, is looking like a fair bit of value. And if he gets the 95, a little bit relies on the key position players at the Demons being fit. Like if Dawes and Clark are out there, you really couldn't see what's he playing back very much. He's a good kick. He has good ball sense. He's entering his sixth season. Former number one pick. He's still really young. Yeah, I quite like the look of Jack Watts as a pick this year. I don't want to oversell him after what he did to me last year, but I'm still quite interested.
I think there's room for maybe only two of these sorts of picks in your entire team. But I think, you know, there's room for the super risky pick, because even though you do point out, you know, maybe an 85 as his baseline, at the end of the day, if he continues with his 75 average, he will turn out to be quite an expensive fail pick.
He certainly would.
But I think, you know, there's room for two of these sorts of picks, and they're sort of your emergency trade-ins essentially before the price changes in round three. If they don't work out, you can trade them off to another mid-pricer who is doing really well, or maybe a rookie that you missed out on. So I think there's room for these sorts of players, but you just got to be careful how many of them you actually pick, because they are quite a risky type just because of their pricing. But you know, I see your point in terms of where his scoring could potentially go. For me, even though it seems logical from a statistical point of view that he could do well, he's still playing for Melbourne. I still don't think he's strong enough to score well while the team's not doing all too well. And because of that, I really struggled to see him at that price. But I think you can make decent enough arguments to put him in your side as well. I just, again, you know, try not to have more than two of these sorts of blokes.
Yep, that's right. And Watsy could be one of those two for me. The one that really interests me is David Swallow. He is my pick of the season. He is an absolute lock for my team.
Yeah, that's a huge call. He's a mid-back MPP this year.
He's never been as a backman before. Struggled with injury in the second year, which kept his average down. Then in his third year, got sent back to learn some lessons. Also struggled a little bit with injury. The Gold Coast don't want to lose him back to Melbourne, so they will sort of do what he wants a little bit, you think. They've got a pretty good midfield. Bennell, Swallow, Ablett, Prestia is sort of the gun four in there. And I think that Swallow will be one of those gun four this year. I'd be very surprised to see him average less than 90, really, and priced really cheaply for essentially he's a goal-kicking midfielder. And after his first season, he had wraps on him that were probably as big as Jago O'Meara has. So it wouldn't surprise me to see him in his fourth season finally step up and average somewhere near what he should be averaging. And I also see the Gold Coast improving this year, winning a few more games. And Swallow already showed in practice games that he can be a goal-kicking midfielder. So, yeah, all over David Swallow this year.
A lot of confidence, Mark. But, I mean, if you're thinking number one draft pick with the amount of wraps that he has had in the past, and, you know, average 80 in that first year, but you'd think that in his fourth year, like you said, how could he average less than 90? You would have thought that he's going to at least deliver some sort of improvement by the time he hits his fourth year. So you can pin his second year scores to the second year Blues, last year to the fact that, you know, he moved to a new position. So absolutely, there's a lot of reason to have big hopes for Swallow. I haven't really looked at him too seriously yet because of the structure of my team at the moment, but maybe I might consider dropping down to this sort of price bracket instead of having another one of Bartel and McVeigh, seeing as we were talking about them being a little bit riskier, because you're selling a really nice story on Swallow, Mark.
Yep, and I know that when he comes and fails, you'll all be knocking on my door saying, oh, you thought us to pick this guy. But yeah, willing to put myself out there on this one. And just everything points towards him being a really good pick this year with the move back into the midfield. And yeah, I like picking the number one pick.
How many players do you think could average 100 plus from Gold Coast this year?
That's pretty tricky to say. Never really thought about it, four or five.
Okay, yeah. So then you'd be confident that Swallow could be one of them then?
Yeah.
Even though we talk up their prospects and stuff, there's a chance that they could only end up with maybe three guys averaging 100 plus if they don't win enough games. And then if they're only three, are you absolutely confident that Swallow could be one of those three? Because they have, like you said, Bennell, Prestia, some pretty good candidates down there. But
I'd be very confident that if he wasn't one of the three, then he would be sort of in the, realistically, my thoughts are 95 plus range, which is absolutely good enough at his price and in the back line. If he averaged 95, you would be stoked.
And Mark, considering the back line is a spot where we have the biggest price fluctuations across the board, there's very rarely a premium defender that isn't at risk of a poor score here and there. Considering that, it is nicer to take these mid prices in the back line because you're going to get better value for your money out of another player like maybe Bartel or McVeigh if they maybe drop in price, or Walker later in the season or throughout the season, because again, we've mentioned potential risks with even their selections. So
yeah, my current sides don't have a lot of money spent in the back line.
So you've got quite a few mid prices then?
Not necessarily. My recent sides have had probably two of the Swallow Grimes Watts picks, and only one of the really expensive guys. And they look like there should be at least a few rookies down back, more than the forward line anyway.
All right, now the last player in this bracket is Grimesy. He's priced, I think, the most expensive out of the three of them at $436,000. He's really not quite lived up to his potential after, remember, both Grimes and Broughton exploding onto the scene in their first season. But just on the Supercoach scoreboard, couldn't quite convert. He'd get the ball, but then really just butchered it going into the Melbourne forward line, which is, again, understandable when there's nothing to kick to and you've got a whole lot of pressure on you. Hopefully there'll be a little bit more structure at the Demons this year. They have recruited a lot of talls in the past that'll surely help the midfielders kicking into the forward line with efficiency, because I think the issue with Grimes never really seemed to be the number of times he can get his hand on the pill, because he did seem to get quite a lot of it. It was just, you know, how he was actually using it.
Sometimes I just watched him at Disgust last year. Like, he'd get the ball four times in a minute and a half and every single kick would miss the target and the ball would just bounce back to him. That doesn't mean that that's not something that he can have improved on. I think that there's a really good chance that if he can stay fit, he will be a defensive premium in the future, but his injury history is probably his biggest concern. Really struggles to stay out in the park for a full season. I know 2012 he did play 21 games, but hasn't played more than 15 in any other year. And generally when he goes down, he seems to, for some reason, do it really early in a game and screw everyone over that has him. So I guess just burnt a little bit by Jack. And yeah, he's a no for me. I can understand why people are picking him at his price. And I do really like the value from some of these cheaper defenders.
Again, that injury history together with the fact that he plays for Melbourne makes it hard for me to pick him over somebody like Swallow. So yeah, Swallow, like you, Mark, would be my pick out of these three.
I didn't really give you much choice on that one.
yeah, but that's all right. I'm sure a lot of people will ride one of Watts or Grimes into the season because structurally it makes a little bit more sense to try for a little bit of value in the back line. And all the best to those two players because they could very well break out this year. It's just whether you want to take that risk.
Yeah, Watts is in and out, and Watts is also available as a forward. So I just want to pick Watts and say I wasn't totally wrong last year. He is a good player, but that might not be a good reason to pick him. Yeah, I just want to clear up a couple of things from the last couple of shows. In the first show, a few people said we left out Tommy Rockliffe as a midfield candidate. I know we all had him as a forward last year. I guess fits into the same category as I just sort of wasn't looking at Brisbane players, and there's lots of other really good options, but I can understand why people would be taking him. And last week I talked up Rioli a fair bit and still thinking that and looking for a way to get him into my side, but he's actually suspended for round one. So that could be a concern, but I think Stevie J missed round one last year, is that right?
Yeah.
And look how he turned out. So maybe he's a good enough pick anyway. Well, I think that's it for tonight's show, man. I think that's pretty well covered the backs. Got some rocks, the NAB Cup, and hopefully some mid-prices to get to before we finish the preseason.
Plenty still to talk to, so we'll try and catch you guys on Sunday for a new wrap of the NAB Cup and which of the players have played well and that you should be looking to bring into your side for season 2014, and who's been stinking it up or moved to a different position and you should be getting them out before the season begins. So stay tuned and all the best with picking your teams.
See you, mate.